You can tell it's the beginning of the retreat. So, welcome everyone to tonight's program and also the official beginning of the winter retreat.
You're gonna put your notes there.
I'll give my notes to you. So I always like to begin my talks by remembering my guru, Swami Muktananda, who always began all of his talks by saying in Hindi, Sabko barasan mane ke saath prem se hrdik swagat, which means with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that that welcome is the essence of spirituality. And so at the beginning of our retreat, let me welcome you all in that spirit, honoring the divinity within every single person. And what we do here is we discover it. We search for it and we discover it and we discard everything we don't need, everything that keeps us from that. And I also want to welcome everybody who's watching on the internet around the world. Well, we have in the United States, New York, Ann Arbor, in Canada, and in Japan, and in Hungary, Portugal, and all around Australia, in Brisbane and Byron Bay. There are quite a few people watching there, and we're going to be up there in a couple of weeks. So if you know people there, send them along, come up yourself. And in Melbourne, people watching there, and even in Mount Eliza. And up on the Sunshine Coast also, so welcome everyone. And I was told, actually, there's another category of people I have to welcome. And now, see, now these talks, these programs, and other programs are being released as podcasts. I only learned about podcasts last week. I'm no millennial, you know. Maybe the other millennium, you know, but not this one. And apparently they're very popular, so if you can catch up on these talks and other things on the podcast, and you can get the download of the Shiva Process Meditation and the Japa CD and other things. And all the secret teachings are there if you know the code. But anyway, I have to welcome people in the future who are watching the podcast. Since time is not a reality, right? So you there in your car, pay attention to your driving. I welcome you. So tonight, as always, I honor the great beings, the great yogis, the great realizers of all the paths, who I think are the greatest sort of unacknowledged resource of humanity. And these are the beings that can help us become who we should really be. And in 1970, when I got the spiritual bug bad, I just decided I was going to find one of these beings. And I figured they were in India. And I'd just go to India and get one. And that's exactly what happened, somehow. So I like to honor the great beings. And of course, the ones closest to my heart are my own guru, Swami Muktananda, and his guru, Bhagwan Nityananda, whose statue, Murti, is right there. And so tonight, we're going to hear some of the teachings of Bhagwan Nityananda. And what do we have? There's Bhagwan Nityananda. He was born in South India and traveled all around, finally ended up in Ganeshpuri, a little village about 50 miles outside of Mumbai. And he spent the last 30 years or so of his life there. And let's see what else you have. And this is him late in life with his devotees. The local villagers all came to him for blessings and sometimes for spiritual instructions too. Next, how many more do you have?
Two more,
okay. That's a beautiful pose of Bhagwan. He was what is known as an avadut, which is he was beyond social convention. And so he had many three-piece suits, but he never wore them. Yeah, go on. And here he is in, what would you call that, a pensive mood in his ashram, Kailas Nivas. And that chair, you like it, Uma? And that chair is still in the same position in Kailas Nivas. When we go to Ganeshpuri, the chair is there, and Bhagwan's vibrations are there. So as you probably figured out already, he wasn't a conventional person. And he didn't give organized programs like these, or like Baba gave, my guru, but he had his own ways. And so every word that he spoke was treasured by anyone who heard them, but we don't have many of his teachings. But fortunately we have a set of them called the Chittakash Gita, or the Song of Higher Consciousness, because one of his devotees down in South India, before he came up to Ganeshpuri, started to write down his utterances. And we owe her a real vote of thanks. So she wrote down some of his utterances, and we have them in this book, the Chittakash Gita. And they're very strange, they're very unique, and also very wonderful. So these are from the Chittakash Gita. Bhagwan says, "Mind, enter the mansion of bliss." You should tell your mind that. See, the mind is surprisingly amenable to being asked and to being told what to do. It needs some guidance. So say, "Oh mind, enter the mansion of bliss." Speak it, say it to yourself. You'll see it likes it. He says, "When floodwaters cover everything, the wells and tanks are lost beneath them." He, one of his charming characteristics is he used metaphors from village life. So it must have been the monsoon season, the rainy season like today. And he says, when everything's flooded, it covers all the wells and the tanks. You can't see them anymore. And so when you make your mind become blissful, all your nasty, crummy, bad moods are hidden. In fact, they're obliterated. So if you fill your mind with bliss, all your bad trips are gone. That's what he's saying. He says, "What is the state of the individual who realizes that the body is not the self?" We have a body, but deeper than that, there's a true self. He says, "Such a person has regained the original state of purity." So I like that because when I was studying and teaching English literature, this was what the Romantics felt. Wordsworth thought that we were born not in a fallen state, but in a state of purity. And then gradually as we become acculturated and we learn all the stupid habits, we lose that. But so the original state of purity, you know, the Zen Buddhists say, what is your face, your original face? What is the face before you were born? There's a state of purity that we have, and we can find that through meditation. So a realized being has gained that state of purity. And no matter what we've done in life, no matter how we've lived it, no matter what traumas we've experienced, or what cruelty we've performed or had performed to us, that state of purity still is there, if we can find it. He says, "I and mine are not visible to the physical eye. They do not exist above the tip of the nose." How about that one? Well, one doesn't really know what he's saying there, but I would say that it means that when through yogic process, your consciousness comes, it doesn't mean this tip of the nose, it means this tip. When you rise above this center, the Ajna Chakra, you go into the impersonal. You're no longer stuck in the I and mind, the person. So there's a place inside of us beyond which we move beyond that, we become in touch with the divine. He says, that which is above these has no beginning and no end. Because the divine, the inner self, is eternal. All that is seen with the physical eye has both beginning and end. In this world, everything has an identity and a beginning and an end, but there's something beyond that, he's saying. The self is invisible to the physical eye. It has no beginning and no end. But you know, when you go deep enough in meditation and you practice enough, the self becomes visible. And you can see the self in everyone. You see that same spirit in everyone. He says, it's impossible to lessen the power of the self. It is ever constant. The goal of yoga, in other words, is always with us at all times, but we're mostly unaware of it. And so what the great sages tell us is become aware of it. Pay attention. Pay attention. Stop worrying about inessentials. Look to the truth. He says the self is like space. It's the same in all directions. Now here we go. This is real Bhagwanism. He says, the head is the abode of light with the brilliance of millions of suns. All right, imagine your head now filled with light. The head filled with light. Brilliance of a million suns. Then he goes, which is bigger, the eye or the sun? Obviously the sun is bigger, right? But no. He says, if the eye is damaged, is it possible to see the sun? So you need the eye to see the sun, therefore the eye is bigger than the sun, it contains the sun. So the eye is more important, he says. The form of images is a creation of the mind. When a person is photographed, the picture reflects the body of the sitter, the one who sits for the photograph. Everybody didn't have a mobile phone in those days, and you know, you had to sit and the virtue or lack of virtue of the photographer does not appear in the picture. Where's the little Bhatti? Where are you?
I could never argue with Bhagwan.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So he's saying that the external eye sees only the person who sits, doesn't see the one who took the picture. But the one who takes the picture, the one who sees through the eyes, is the inner self. That's what Bhagwan's talking about. There's more charming analogies. He loves railroads particularly. So you can figure this one out for me. Well, at the end. He says, let the 10 senses, did you know you had 10 senses? In India they talk about the five senses of knowledge, the Jnanendriyas and the Karmendriyas. Those are the organs of actions. So they group them as 10. There's the normal five senses that we know, plus the arms and legs and so on. Those are all put in one category, the indriyas. He says, let the 10 senses be restrained in the service of the buddhi, of the intellect, like a bird with clipped wings. So this is the yogi talking. This is Bhagwan, the yogi. Control your senses, control your mind, control what you do and what you think. Have some self-discipline. Why? For happiness. Because misery comes when you let the mind run amok. So he says, draw the prana from the 10 directions into one path inward and upward to the heart sky. Now there's a Bhagwan Nityananda. If you show me that line, I say, well, it's either Shakespeare or Eminem or Bhagwan Nityananda. Draw the prana from the 10 directions into one path, inward and upward to the heart sky. Bring the breath inward and upward. Bring the energy inward and upward. He says, find inner peace, find liberation in equal-sightedness. Means seeing everything as the same. Don't get too excited. From the heart of freedom, see all as free. And now we get into that's a great line, isn't it? From the heart of freedom, see all as free. If you feel free in yourself, you'll see freedom everywhere. And now we have the train metaphor, which I'll let you work it out, okay? He says, the body is the engine. Knowledge is the steam. Discrimination, the movement. Faith, the rails. Let the train be guided correctly. That makes only vague sense to me. But we're like a train. Buddhi, the intellect, is the driver. Well, that makes sense. The driver, the intellect drives your train, doesn't he? The digestive system is the boiler. That makes sense too. The fire of the digestion. The nadis are the gears. The nadis are the subtle nerves. How does that work? The gears, I don't know. And then he goes, finishes it by saying, enter the Atman through the path of Buddhi. Enter the self through the intellect, through right understanding. Attain peace. He's just a little bit beyond your grasp, isn't he? But it makes you strain your mind up there somewhere. And then it gets lost there and you pass out. Here's another one, another train. From a distance, the train and the rails appear to be joined together. But really, they are separate. He also says that about a boat. Boat and water seem one, but actually they're separate. The rails are preset by nature. They're always, you know. The train is moved by the steam of subtle discrimination. So now the steam is subtle discrimination. What was it before? It was knowledge. That's close. The connection between body and spirit must be examined. Must be examined by the subtle intelligence. Then peace is attained. That's very interesting. To separate, to find the true self from the personhood, from the personality, from the body, to find the true self at the core. He says, as the railroad cars are connected into one train, so let the individual and the self be connected. Sever the bonds of the physical qualities. Let the jiva reach eternal liberation. Jiva is the individual. So he said, break the ties that keep you bound to physical reality. It doesn't mean go to a cave, but it means get rid of attachment. And then, and let the jiva, let yourself become liberated. How's that? Ready for a little more Bhagwan? It's strong medicine. Okay, here's a different one. He says, constant practice is needed to make vairagya steady and permanent. Vairagya is detachment or desirelessness. So here's a yogi, Bhagwan being the yogi, saying you have to practice. Which, what does he mean by practice? Meditation, contemplation, inquiry, mantra repetition. If you strengthen your mind through these practices, you can attain detachment. He says renunciation is not related to the body. When the mind is fixed and unwavering, then one sees the self. So the mind has to be, this is a yogi speaking. We control the mind, make it stable. What does it mean by stable mind? Well, what's our mind do? Oh, this and that, blah, 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 this to do, worry about this, worry about that. Self-hatred, tearing thoughts, blah, 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 blah. All day long, the mind afflicts us. But if we learn how to stabilize the mind, make it peaceful, then it doesn't torture us. That's what he's talking about. When one knows, but is as if he did not know, then one sees the self. Those who see the self are like blind men, though they see, like the deaf, though they hear, though they acted as if they have not acted. Even when the senses are functioning, they're not attached to them. Their actions are like inaction. So there's a long spiritual tradition, not only in yoga, but in many different traditions, where they use paradox to talk about these things. That's what he's doing, to see but not to see, and so on. Because the mind, the intellect can't really grasp the level of consciousness that he's talking about, so he uses opposites and paradox. He says, their tendency, these are realized beings, great beings, siddhas. Their tendency is greater towards dissolution and lesser towards creation. Their capacity to forget is great, so their actions are inactions. What does that sound like? He's being a Vedantin here. He's saying that they're pulled out of life. You know, Bhagwan, in our tradition, it's very interesting because you can't really characterize this lineage because it contains everything. So Bhagwan is a Vedantin. He says, give up the world's an illusion. And he's also a yogi. He says, control the mind, discipline the mind, be strong. But Baba Muktananda went in the direction of Shaivism. He says, you can lead a perfectly normal life in your wherever you are, in your family, doing your work and so on, and still attain the ultimate. You can find God in the world. This was what Baba would say. But he was also a great yogi, believed in being very, very disciplined in the mind. Don't let the mind go in wrong directions. You know, people don't understand that they have freedom, free will over their minds. A lot of times we're victims of the mind. The mind spontaneously starts attacking you and saying, I'm no good, I'm a loser, and so on. We don't have to think those thoughts. We say to the mind, oh mind, what did he say before? Oh mind, what did he say? Be in bliss or something. Yeah. So mind, shut up, I don't want to hear that. But we think, I'm a loser, and we think, oh, that must be true. My mind's telling me. You have to say, shut the hell up. Who taught you that? It's your mother, your father, your sister, your brother. So tell it to shut up. He says, the attention is concentrated on the kernel and not on the shell of the coconut. So here's another metaphor from coconut. The kernel, the essence. On the self, not the body. Always focus on the core, on the central thing. They are beyond merit and demerit. They are like a boat in the water. Here's the boat. The two are different, as the gross and the subtle are different. They're indifferent to the bodily functions. These are the great beings, concentrating only on divine wisdom. They're thinking about the highest. We pay so much attention to the what's inessential in life. This one said that about me. That one said that. I hate that person. This person doing, and saying that to elevate our minds. Think of the highest. He says they drink the juice of sugarcane and throw away the rind. Once the juice is converted to sugar, it cannot become cane again. Once the self has been realized, the body idea never comes back. So once we know who we really are, we don't get lost in misery and suffering and ignorance anymore. As old vessels are renewed by repairs and polish, I'm assuming that the old vessel, like old pots, you fix the old pot. When old desires and impressions are tied up and controlled, the intellect can be transformed into pure illumination. Then there is contentment. That's worth thinking about. He says, just as old pots can be repaired and made new, our minds are filled with old crap. Traumas from our youth and wrong understanding, wrong information, all kinds of things. He says, when these desires and impressions are tied up and controlled, then the mind is transformed into pure illumination. If you were able to examine your mind and see the wrong pathways it goes down, towards self-hatred, towards worry, towards fear, towards jealousy, towards anger, all these ways that are no good, they're not healthy at all for you. And if you could control them and choose to move in a different direction, then your mind becomes pure illumination. Instead of creating all this darkness, it creates pure illumination. Then there is contentment. To be contented, very few of us have contentment for more than a fleeting moment. That feeling of totally being content with the life that we have. How are you doing? Are you passed out yet? Should we end or should we do one more? Well, that vodka's good. I'm trying to get rid of my phlegm I always have, so this is what is it? Lemon?
Gin and tonic.
Lemon. Gin and tonic. He's looking at you, kid. Anyway, so that was one side of Bhagwan, is the yogi and the Vedantin, but he's also the Kundalini yogi. The yogi of the great awakening. So here he is in that role. He says, seeing equality is the upward breath at the time of death. We talk about, and Shiva Prasad talk about, the upward shift, which is actually the movement of the divine expansion, the movement of joy. You know, when you see somebody that you love, you know, after a long time, you feel that joy. Oh, you know, so that joy is the footprint of God, according to Shaivism. So, at the time of death, the upward breath, then you attain liberation. He says, invisible, full of delight, subtle, eternal, balancing the incoming and outgoing breaths is yoga. With Guru's grace, cultivate this balance. Pranayam, it's one meditation technique, is to make the in-breath and out-breath even. He says, meditate in the head. Meditate on the ocean of eternal delight. Meditate on the Ida, the Pingala, and the Sushumna. And these are the three main nadis, or nerves, subtle nerves, that won't go up the spine. And like the medical caduceus, there's one central one called the Sushumna, and the other two, Ida and Pingala, go like that. It's very, very mysterious. Now we get the great statement. All right. Arise, Kundalini delight! I knew Savitri couldn't handle that one. I'll say it again. Arise, Kundalini delight! The match is in the box. The light is in the match. Strike the match and light the fire! Kundalini is the great fire. Ignorance is darkness. Knowledge is light. Kundalini is the eternal delight. The great power of upliftment. The great power of upliftment is what the Kundalini power is. It's the divine power of joy and upliftment. He says, Kundalini is the eternal delight in the heart, the light of Brahman, ablaze with the light of a million suns. Sunlight is the subtle light. The solar nerve is the Sushumna, the lunar nerve, the Ida, and the stellar nerve, the star, is the Pingala. So he's very mystical. Sun is the highest, and that's the central canal. And the moon and the stars are the lesser ones. The essence of the third eye is wisdom, jnana. In this jnana nadi, there is sleep, sushupti. In sushupti, there's no wakefulness. Balancing the inward and outward breath, enjoy the subtle sleep. If you go into a trance, it's too much, I can see. Find the eternal joy of the balanced breath. The seat of the breath is the truth, the inward space, the chittakash, the space of consciousness, unbounded pure awareness, the sky of the heart. This doesn't make any sense to the mind, but it's obviously speaking to something, isn't it? I'll read that again. Find the eternal joy of the balanced breath. The seat of the breath is the truth, the inward space, the chittakash, the space of consciousness, unbounded pure awareness, the sky of the heart. Within the chittakash is the tower of eternal delight, the seat of peace. That's pure poetry, isn't it? Poetry of the beyond. Sleep consciously, not the gross sleep of the beast, but the sleep of man, the spiritual sleep. When talking, when sitting, without thoughts, without desires, without ideas. Fix your attention on the breath. Now here's a method. Fix your attention on the breath. Listen to the mantra of the inward and outward breath. Breath coming in, hum and sa, just coming in and out. Do this with constant, uninterrupted devotion and attain liberation. Just watch the breath with great love. Draw the breath up and down as water is drawn from the well. Purak is the upward drawn breath. If you know anything about pranayama, if you've done yoga seriously, you know that there's the in-breath, which they call purak, and there's the out-breath called rechak, and then the breath when it's held is called kumbhak. I think we've gone too far here. Draw the breath up and down as water is drawn from the well. Purak is the upward drawn breath. Breathe in and up. Kumbhak is the suspended breath. Rechak is the downward breath, the breathing out. Draw the breath up to the Brahmarandra. Kindle the fire. Purify the nerves. Burn up the impurities. This is the yoga fire. The fire of deliberation. The fire of digestion, the solar light, the pure energy of the Supreme. All of the universe is this pure energy. Creation is but a delusion of the mind. There is no creation to the equal-sighted. Well, I'm very shocked at your behavior. Wonderful stuff. Now, what did you gain from it tonight? What did Swamiji talk about tonight? All right, let's do a little meditation. Bhagwan Nityananda meditation. We'll close our eyes. We'll meditate now. We're going to meditate for 10 minutes. But first, I'll lead a little meditation. I was going to do some Shiva process meditation, but I think we have to do a Bhagwan type of meditation. So what we're going to do is breathe in, and in the in-breath, draw the breath up into the head, way up in the top of the head, the Brahmarandra. Breathe in, and then hold it briefly. Then breathe out. Let it go all the way down and out. And the in-breath goes up to the top, like you're drawing water out of the well. And then you let the bucket go down. And you breathe up again. And you let it down. And for this meditation, we'll meditate for 10 minutes, and we can start by listening to the mantra of the breath, as Bhagwan said, which is just watch the breath come in and go out. Just watch it come in and go out, and sit very calmly and patiently. Breath comes in, breath goes out. We'll meditate for 10 minutes.